Well, good morning again, everybody. I just want you to pause for a second and sit and appreciate something that we usually take for granted. Here's the truth. Right now, in this very moment, you are living out one of Jesus's most powerful and profound promises. It's a promise made 2,000 years ago. And Jesus was leading a group of about 12 people, not a large group. And here's what he said to Peter: I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. And I've just been fascinated by this image, gates of hell. Obviously, not a literal fortification. This image Jesus uses invites you all to picture something, to picture, imagine all of the forces of evil, whatever that looks like. For a second, just do that. Imagine the gates of hell. I think you'd have to include the spiritual, so the demonic, you'd have to include, really concretely, things like institutional evils. You'd have to include hate, destructive habits, selfishness, oppression, addiction, persecution, murder, crime, corruption, greed, that's the gates of hell. It's evil. Evil is as big as an empire and also as small as a subconscious impulse, right? But evil is real, it's big, and it is a consuming, growing category. And look, I'm a church guy, so I read this verse, and I love the first part. I just point out that. I love that the task of building the church isn't dependent on us. Let's admit it. Us Christians aren't great at this, right? I love the first part. It encourages me that things like attendance going up and down, pastors messing up, cultural pressures changing winds in our world. What I love about this verse as a church guy is that none of what's going on changes the fact that Jesus is building a church. But today, I want to think about the second part, because all you have to do is look around, and it sure looks at times like the gates of hell are overcoming. Look around. Tragedy seems frequent. Hope seems hard to find. If there's a battle, it sure feels at times as though evil isn't just fortified behind gates, but sometimes it feels like it's overcoming. It feels like it's winning. And Jesus talks about that. Gates of hell, and he addresses very real things that so many of us sense and feel, that bad is overcoming. You get that feeling that evil seems to inevitably get worse and may very well continue. And I love this verse because Jesus says that he's got a plan. He is going to stand up against evil right now on earth. And to be clear, this verse is about present. This isn't talking about the final battle that ends the war. Different texts promises that one day Jesus will return in power as judge and king. And there will be a day where we all wonder why we ever had any questions about injustice, because one day God will return and make everything right. But this verse isn't about that. That day's not today. And this promise here is a claim about right now, that the gates of hell have an unbeatable foe, that Jesus has a plan right now to fight evil. And let me be clear, sometimes Jesus and I have very different ways of thinking about stuff. If I had to brainstorm about something that would withstand evil, I would think of something pretty quick. I don't know, Jesus, right? I would go, here's my plan. The guy who made the earth can certainly get rid of whatever evil I'm complaining about, right? If it were up to me, here's my plan. I would have Jesus show up and strike people with lightning, right? Rebuild institutions, change culture, government. Like, my plan would have an actor of one. It would be Jesus, and I would sit and watch and maybe sing songs about it. That's my plan, right? I think it's a good plan, but that's not Jesus' plan for opposing evil. See what Jesus does right now about the gates of hell? Like, all the evil stuff that seem so strong. Like, Jesus is like, okay, so there's evil, and I've got a plan. This is Jesus' plan for evil. I will build my church. That's the plan. Like, the church, Jesus' church. And Jesus says a lot of things about the church. In Matthew 4, he says, the kingdom of heaven is here in church. Matthew 6, God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven among God's people. Or Matthew 6, we store up the treasure of heaven here. Matthew 16, 18, we bind up and loose on earth what's bound up in and freed in heaven here. Or 1 Corinthians 3 or 1 Peter 2, we are the heavenly temple here. That's Jesus' church. Now, there's another line Jesus uses, and it's probably one of the most famous lines about the church that I know of. It's made famous by speakers like JFK and Ronald Reagan, who long talk about America as the city where? On a hill. You know this. What a great line, right? And to be clear, this is my own personal opinion. This isn't the Bible here. I love America. It's my home. I think it's the best country in the world. I have lots of opinions. I think democracy and Western values can make the globe a better place. That's just how I feel about it. But I'm a Bible guy first, and I think you should give credit to whose credit due. Those presidents stole the line, like verbatim, and the idea from Jesus. Like, this is a Bible verse. And Jesus, when he talks about, he put the verse up, when he uses the light of the world, city on a hill, he's not talking about a country built 1,700 years later. He's talking about a people. A city on a hill is a church. The light of the world is the church of Jesus Christ. This verse is about followers of Christ all over the globe. You, he says, are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. That's what Jesus says about us. That's Jesus' plan, right? His plan for pushing back on evil is that his church that he builds would be the light of the world, whether that's the United States or anywhere on this planet. God's church is what our world needs in culturally and politically chaotic times. So we're going to talk about it. This fall, we're doing a sermon series I'm calling Rediscover Church. I'm convinced that we've got to talk about what God has called churches to do. We need to rediscover Jesus' plans. It's provocative. I think we need to do this for two reasons. The first reason is that in the 2,000 years since Jesus made these promises, a lot of churches have forgotten what Jesus called them to do. A lot of churches have become things that Jesus never built them to become. Churches have become social clubs, lobbying groups, entertainment hubs. Churches have become museums, marketing machines. A lot of us church people need to be challenged by the really incredible mission that God has called us to do, to get out of consumerism and our comfort zones and to hear fresh what Jesus built us to do. That's the first reason we need to rediscover church. The second thing that's happened is that for a bunch of reasons, a lot of people in our culture have no idea what a church is supposed to be. They don't go to church, and everything they've heard about what a church is turns them off to going to church. And I'm convinced that people you know, many of whom have been burned and messed up by the institution of church, they could really benefit from seeing what Jesus is building. So we're going to talk about this. In fact, if you know someone who hasn't been to church in a really long time, maybe ever, I think what we're going to talk about in the next few weeks would actually really help them as we look at Jesus' plan to resist evil. So I want to encourage you to invite folks you know to join us in the next several worship services, and we're going to rediscover what Jesus is building. So that was my plan. Months ago, I was planning this message, and the first message was really simple. I was going to talk about how important the role of local churches are, and I was going to talk about the role of local churches. What I said so far, the church is Jesus' plan A to go against evil, and then I was going to spend a lot of time defining what a church is, because a lot of people think a church is a building or an institution or a brand. Like, most people think that the church, in fact, looks like the American church. So I was going to look at a bunch of verses, like 1 Corinthians 12:13. Paul writes, by one spirit, we're all baptized into one body. I was going to talk about how together we're not an institution, we're people following Jesus, representing Jesus, and all the things we normally think about, institutions, buildings, programs, it's really people. I was going to talk about Romans 12, one body, many members, people who follow Christ are really different, and this is inside, but let me just be up front. I had, I'm not even kidding, about 50 verses to go through, and my plan was to have Adam do like three songs and spend about 40 minutes trying to show you from the Bible that church is people, and people from every time and place and tongue and nation, age. I was going to work really hard to try and convince you that Jesus was building that, and we plan, and God laughs, because I was looking at my 50 verses, and then the kids' ministry team asked to have a moving up ceremony, and I got to be honest, this is, you're going to think terribly of me, but my first impulse was, seriously, I got such a long message to give, and having kids up here is really going to cut into my message about how young people are people and the church is people. How can that work? And then Pastor Gilbert and Marco came to me. They said, we've got a problem. You're planning a Spanish-speaking church. And we've got 10 formal members, like 15 baptisms, and we really have to do an installation first. And I'm not even kidding. This is how bad I am. My first thought was, seriously? On the Sunday where I'm trying to study how Jesus' church is made up of every tongue and nation, like, seriously? We have to do like English and Spanish? That's gonna take up so much time for my sermon. And I read my 50 verses, and I think God is just laughing at my arrogance. Because you saw what happened up here? Before I got up here to preach, you saw and heard in vibrant colors a more convincing message than I could ever deliver. Like, that's what you saw, right? This is really cool. God's plan, my sermon topic for the day was that God's plan for resisting evil and churches, people, all sorts of people, young, old, and you know, I love having young folks up here. You've heard the expression, kids are the future of the church. It sounds good, but it's not true. Kids aren't the future, they are the church. They're people of God. So we teach them and we love them and we expect them to love their neighbors already. And we just celebrate that fact. Sixth graders, I'm glad to have you here. This is not gonna be a long sermon, I hope. But what I love about Christianity is how global it is too. Not just young and old, but all over the world. There's this song in Revelation, "Worthy are you," they sing, "to take the scroll, to open the seals, because with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people." Like, look at this. The church is magnificent. Like, this local church knows this. Goshen Church knows this because we started almost 90 years ago as an immigrant church. For years, we printed things in Dutch. We had services and sermons that weren't in English. This is not the first service we've had here in multiple languages. If you grew up around here, you know what it's like to be an immigrant and trying to fit in. Young folks, find some older folks, ask some questions. I've been just inspired and shocked by what some of our early immigrant church planters 90 years ago went through. And that's just this church. The global church is between 2 and 8,000 years, depending on your theology, but think about the demographics. Most of Christian churches in the world don't look or think like me. I mean, you should just appreciate that the church is bigger and older than you think. Like, a couple stats. Right now, this Sunday, there are 2.83 billion, with a B, professing Christians all over the world. And the United States gets a whole 230 million of them. That's a very small piece of the pie. The American church, for as affluent and as loud as we are a very small fraction of the global eternal church. And right now, more people are singing in Spanish than in English on this planet. I think that's really encouraging, because you need to know this, that the church that Jesus is building, it's bigger, it's more diverse, and it's more powerful than American news leads us to believe. It's also as small as each of us when two or three are gathered. You know, I could go on for a long time, but I want to respect your Sunday. I'll leave you with this. Right now, if you're a Christian, I want you to think about and just, I want to sink in that you belong to God. And you need to know this morning that Jesus promised that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church that Jesus builds to his glory. So, Father in heaven, I pray that whatever evil we may be facing, whatever forces, trends, suffering that threatens to discourage us, disrupt us, or distract us, Father, can we see your faithfulness? Can we feel how great you are? Father, thank you for your church of Jesus Christ. Can you help us to love each other as we are different and we have differences? Can you allow our faith in you to be bigger than whatever keeps us separate? Father, thank you for our Spanish church. Thank you for our kids. Thank you for this group here worshiping the glory of your name. May we glorify you by all we do, think, and say. I ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.